This is Fresh Air. I'm Terry Gross. My guests are Amy Schumer, who wrote and stars in the new movie comedy Trainwreck, and Judd Apatow, who directed and produced the film. Schumer has become a feminist comedy icon for her hilarious take on body image, sex, gender, relationships, and pop culture. Today, she was nominated for an Emmy for Best Lead Actress in a Comedy Series for her performance in her Comedy Central series, Inside Amy Schumer. Judd Apatow directed and wrote or co-wrote the films The 40-Year-Old Virgin, Knocked Up, Funny People, and This Is 40. In Trainwreck, Schumer plays a single woman named Amy who doesn't want to commit to a relationship, unlike her sister, who's married and has a child with another on the way. Amy is a writer at a men's magazine where she's assigned to write a profile of a sports medicine doctor, in spite of the fact that she's uninterested in and knows nothing about sports. She hits it off with the doctor, who's played by Saturday Night Live alum Bill Hader. They start seeing each other, but that doesn't change her reluctance to commit. That reluctance is partially explained by a flashback scene at the beginning of the film when she's a young child and her parents are divorcing. Her father, played by Colin Quinn, is trying to explain to Amy and her sister why he can't be faithful to their mother. The children are carrying their dolls.
I don't know what your mother told you, but let me explain it from my side in terms you can understand. You got your doll, right? You got your doll there.
Yes.
You love your doll?
Yes.
Yes.
But what if I told you that was the only doll you were allowed to play with the rest of your life? How would you feel?
Sad.
You'd feel sad. Of course.
There's other dolls you like, and they're making new dolls every year. You want a stewardess doll?
Yeah.
What about a slightly overweight cocktail waitress doll?
Uh-huh. Yeah.
What about a doll who happens to be best friends with your main doll?
Yeah.
It could happen, right?
Yeah.
What about a doll you only play with one day and never see again?
Yeah.
So that's why me and Mom are getting divorced.
Amy Schumer and Judd Apatow, welcome to Fresh Air. I love that explanation about why monogamy isn't realistic.
And thank you.
You know, that scene happens toward the very beginning of the movie, and I knew as soon as I saw that scene that I was going to love this film. So, Amy, how did you come up with this ridiculous way of explaining why monogamy isn't realistic?
Well, I would say that my parents never broke it down for us orally, but it was learned through their behavior. So it was never really explained. And my dad was he's so funny and sarcastic, but he would treat us a little bit too much like adults. Like, he taught my sister and I how to play poker, like, very seriously when we were just, like, toddlers. And he was like, if this were a real game, somebody would have killed you, you know. Just little girls. So that way of kind of talking to us and that kind of gruffness, which Colin brought to it, that's very much my dad.
So this scene helps explain why your character is afraid of intimacy, because she's been brought up with this idea that monogamy isn't realistic. So did you come of age thinking that too? That, like, relationships don't last? So why bother?
My parents were both married 3 times, and they got divorced when I was, like, I think, like, 12 years old. So, and just seeing the way they kind of behaved, and then my own observations from, like, the normal little teenage heartbreaks, and I think also the stories I liked. It was, like, all Les Mis. It was all these unrequited love stories. I was just pretty sure that I was just going to have my heart torn out. So I've always had this like, major fear of having my heart very broken because of unrequited love. And that's actually never happened, or not so far, but I live in constant fear of that. And I think that was reflected sort of in my behavior and not wanting to get too close to anyone. Yeah, I have mostly been in long-term relationships, but I think I've never really given myself over to them for the fear of being hurt.
Judd Apatow, you suggested that Amy Schumer write a screenplay after hearing her on Howard Stern and hearing her be so funny on his show. What did you suggest? Like, when you approached her, what did you pitch to her?
Well, actually, first I called Ronnie the limo driver, and he said he refused to write a script. And then I asked...
You got to stay on him about that.
I asked Gary. I asked everybody. Well, she was telling stories about her relationships and also stories about her dad, who has multiple sclerosis, and what it's like to have that relationship with someone who's going through a chronic illness. And the stories were very dark and sad, but also showed a lot of love for her dad, and they were really funny and warm at the same time. And I remember sitting in the car thinking, this is a hilarious stand-up comedian, and I don't think she understands what a great storyteller she is. So I thought I would tell her.
So, Amy, once Judd Apatow asked you to write a screenplay, you did write one, and it's basically your version, your take on a rom-com. It's part parody of that and part that. So I'm interested in hearing some of the things that annoy you about rom-coms and some of the things you really like about it that you wanted to work with.
I would say what the things that I think annoy everybody about rom-coms, you're just like, we just know all the points that the story has to hit. Like, okay, there's going to be a conflict and then they're going to be okay. And, you know, it's just like kind of, it feels like a little exhausting. So I think, like, I think the form, there's a reason that that's the format. You don't want it to be like, there's no problem. And you just kind of watch these people fall in love and then they die. there's got to be something. But, you know, sometimes when it's just any time it's not earned and like, or when they don't actually have chemistry and you're just like, come on.
Let's hear another scene from the film. And your character, Amy, has a rule in the movie, don't stay overnight with a man, unless it's like your boyfriend and you're already in a long relationship. But sometimes she drinks so much, she wakes up in a man's bedroom and has no idea where she is. So in this scene, she's just violated her rule, and she stayed overnight with Aaron, the sports medicine doctor, played by Bill Hader, who she's just started to see. And the next morning, at the office, she describes the night to her friend and colleague Nikki, played by Vanessa Bayer. And in the middle of this scene, we're going to hear Aaron, the sports medicine doctor played by Bill Hader. We're going to hear him call her. And his best friend, LeBron James, is sitting next to him trying to listen in on the conversation. So Amy speaks first.
I slept at the doctor's place last night.
Oh, my God, because you were, like, blackout drunk?
No, that's the thing. I was dead sober. I had, like, two drinks. Three, max. Four, now that I'm tallying, but it was like,
okay,
I was sober.
So you barely drank? Barely. Because you're on antibiotics or something?
Oh my God, he's calling.
Why would he call? You guys just had sex.
It's probably a mistake. It's a mistake.
He's butt dialing you.
Hello?
Oh, hey there, it's Aaron.
Oh, this is Amy. I think you butt dialed me.
No, I dialed you with my fingers.
What'd she say?
Shh.
He called me on purpose.
Hang up, he's obviously like sick or something.
Yeah, what's up?
I was calling to say I had a really good time last night. I was wondering if you wanted to hang out again.
Will you say that again, please?
I was wondering if I could see you again.
You know what? I'm going to call the police.
I love that. That a man wanting to see you again is like a sign of psychotic behavior.
Yeah, like this is obviously a pyramid scheme.
And Amy, you're great at getting what's funny, awkward, and sometimes just bad about new sexual experiences. And the funny things about sleeping together with someone for the first time, like your character hates to spoon and says, I think this is so great. She says, let's try to sleep in a realistic position. Did you sit down and just try to think, what are the most embarrassing or awkward or just like physically uncomfortable things about spending the night with someone for the first time?
Yeah, well, a lot of this version of myself is based on me in college. I would say my sophomore year specifically, where I did have a bunch of partners and, you know, who I knew I wasn't going to date. And
songwriting partners?
Yes, songwriting partners, Judd. And we try to keep Judd very sheltered. We told him that his daughters are here because of storks bringing them. So there were these experiences. And yeah, like, you know, sometimes you'd be like, okay, I'm going to spend the night here. And then there's some guy and he's like breathing on you and you're just like, oh, like. And you just resent him. So I was like, what if this were different if I were to actually just say to him, like, I'm not going to try to just be the thing that you want and try to be this perfect person for you. I'm like, if I'm going to stay here, like, I'm going to put a pillow between us and don't breathe on me. Just that she's communicating with someone for the first time. Like, I'm going to just say what I actually want instead of trying to be some fantasy for you. But for me personally, yeah, there's this like misconception like that women want to be held all night and some do, and I'm sure, and some guys like that, but I love spooning. I love, you know, I'm like a like latchkey dog. Like I love to be, I guess they all are, but I love to be held. And I love, I'm very affectionate, but when I go to sleep, I'm a like, please don't come anywhere near me person.
Now, in the early part of the movie, John Cena plays your boyfriend, and he's in the film. He's a CrossFit instructor. In real life, John Cena is a WWE wrestler and
world champion.
Yeah, and I thought, like, why did Amy Schumer hire a professional wrestler for this role? It seems kind of improbable that somebody with that body, you know. But then I found out.
Wait, what seems improbable?
Well, those bodies don't exist in the real world. You know, like,
oh, right.
And I figured, like, what are the odds your character would know, like, a wrestler or, like, somebody who has a body like that? Because you have to, like, work so hard to get that kind of, I don't even know what the word is, but, you know.
Physique,
yeah. Then I read that your boyfriend used to be Dolph Ziggler, who's a wrestling champion and who's actually out of commission at the moment because an opponent injured his trachea with a crutch on his throat.
It's so funny.
I didn't mean to do that,
well,
by the
Judd,
way.
You do need to know, understand your strength. Hearing you, Terry, talk about Dolph Ziggler on NPR is the funniest thing that I've ever experienced.
It's the first time his name has been mentioned on Fresh Air.
But it did make me wonder, your comedy is about being self-conscious about your body sometimes and how women are basically almost forced to be self-conscious about their bodies because of all of these standards that are projected onto them that they should achieve physically. But anyway, so to have a physical relationship with somebody who has such a kind of constructed body, I'm wondering what that was like and what it made you feel about your own body. Not that that's too personal, right, to talk about?
Well, for me personally, I don't like having a six-pack. Was she asking me?
No,
but this is a funny one in terms of like the process of how this is written, which is Amy talked about, you know, we knew she dated a wrestler. And so I was saying, you know, maybe there's something funny about getting tossed around in a scene. And then John came in and in rehearsals, it became clear that this idea that Amy had about John being bad at talking dirty was the funniest thing we had ever seen. He just did it so funny. So the joke really ultimately wasn't about his body as much as an enormous man who isn't verbal. And so it just like took another path in the development of her script for a long time. Then he, you know, he looks good. And, you know, as a director, you know, I need eye candy.
Yes, you do.
That's an important part for me.
Which so is I was also like, where Dave Attell came into the mix.
Exactly. The verbal joke was making us laugh. And, you know, he is so funny. I think it's because those guys improvise so much. And Amy wrote so many hilarious lines we were feeding him. But then when you would just let him go and just say, hey, John, talk in sports metaphors dirty. And during sex, he's like, there's no I in team. I mean, he is so hilarious. But then he just happened to have a body that looked good. But
we just had the added fun visual.
Yeah.
I get that, but my question still stands. Dealing with somebody whose job, it's like their life is all about building their body. Everything revolves around that.
Right. Truly, it did not make me self-conscious. I think as a woman, I just kind of feel like wherever my weight is, if it's up or down, when I take off my clothes, there is a certain sense of you're welcome, you know, and it's, I feel like I look like a real person and I'm soft and squishy, but I'm a woman and I feel sexy. And so, and I got to tell you, Tara, when you're naked with somebody who's like jacked like that, you still feel hot. And for me, and the way it feels to touch a person like that, for me, it wasn't as exciting as I kind of thought it would be. It really does feel different.
It's like having a Mack truck on you.
Yeah, like it's like a refrigerator fell on you. I like someone who's a little squishier.
If you're just joining us, my guests are Amy Schumer, who wrote and stars in the new movie comedy Trainwreck, and Judd Apatow, who directed and produced it. Amy, your character's father has MS. And during the movie, moves into assisted living. And one of the things your character and her sister has to do is kind of pack up his stuff, and decide what to keep and what to save. And even though the father has MS, it's not like he's just treated as this, you know, person who is now weak and vulnerable and everybody's just totally sympathetic to, because he's a really, he's the kind of guy who speaks his mind whether he's right or wrong, and he tells you what he thinks you should be doing, whether he's right or wrong or whether it's any of his business. Your father is still alive, and I was wondering if you were concerned that he'd see the movie and be offended, and if you can let that interfere with your writing.
If I thought he would be offended by anything, that would definitely interfere with my writing. There's a lot I didn't put in the movie about both my parents, but my dad has seen all of his scenes in the movie, and he loves it. And he's like, you know, it's the cloth that I'm cut from. He's also an oversharer and someone who's very open about being a human being and the mistakes he's made, and he knows it's an accurate portrayal, and he's thrilled, honestly. But yeah, I'm not like the art comes first. If I thought anybody that would be hurt by something, I would never write about it.
Did you have to make the decisions that your character makes when he moves into assisted living, of what to save and what to discard from his home, and to have to make those decisions without him?
No. No, the way that he went into assisted living was that he was, he remarried and he moved in with this woman who he was living with her in New Orleans. And then she out of nowhere kind of kicked him out and kind of left him on the side of the road in his wheelchair. And we had to just go get him and move him into assisted living. So she kept all of his stuff.
Wow, really?
Yep.
Well, that sounds...
And her name...
How old were you when that happened? Was this something recent?
Or 4 or 5 years ago.
Well, so it's pretty recent.
Maybe more. My sister's saying more. Maybe six years ago. Yeah, it was horrible. I got the call, and I had to go on stage right after, and and it was traumatizing.
You both have parents who divorced when you were young, and those divorces were turning points in your lives, and your lives as adults have taken opposite directions, in the sense that, Judd, you married pretty young. You have two children who are in their teens now. And Amy, you're...
a barren wasteland who's going to die alone.
Terry, how can you say that?
Terry!
you've chosen to until this point in your life, remain single and to not have children. And I'm wondering if you think you've both reacted in some ways differently to watching divorce in your family, in terms of what you wanted for yourself.
Yeah, we've gone the dead opposite ways from each other. I think for me, I honestly haven't met anyone yet that I want to be with forever, that I would want to commit to and start a family with. I love that idea, and I'd be into that. I don't know how realistic I think monogamy is for some people. I sort of have some like evolving views of that, but I love the idea of making a commitment to someone and having a family. But yeah, I've never met, there's no one that got away. I never ran from something that would have been good. Yeah, so that's kind of my reasoning. And, you know, my reason for not marrying young, like some of my friends, and starting a family is because I didn't want to do it. I never fantasized about being married. I never played wedding or bride when I was a little kid, and my interests were in other places. Yeah, and I just didn't meet that. I wasn't lucky enough to meet that person.
And Jen, I'm wondering if, like, seeing divorce in your family made you want to make sure you created your own family that was, you know, like, better and different, which is, a lot of people assume they'll be able to do that.
Well, I do think that is a part of it, because as a kid, you just think, oh, why didn't you guys try harder? Why didn't you figure it out? Because you only see it through your eyes of how it affects you. And I think that, you know, it made me think, oh, you know, there's work that goes into it. But there are some couples, like my parents said, should not have been together. So it as you get older, you realize, well, there was no way that was going to work anyway. But I definitely try to take lessons, you know, from what they did wrong and what they did right. They were always very supportive of me and very loving and always believed that I could succeed and but they were also very negative. But I got very lucky. I met an amazing person young, and I have two amazing kids, so I'm not in the situation my parents were in. You know, I'm in a, you know, a very happy situation that still requires work, but it wasn't what my parents were dealing with.
Since you wrote the movie, Amy, and Judd, you directed it, Amy, were there times where you felt like, no, I wrote that. This is my conception of it. You're wrong in your conception.
Very rarely. Like, I think anytime we had any moments of, Judd was just so patient with me and so cool about collaborating and talking it out. And there were just only a couple moments I can think of where there was any divide, because usually we're on the same page, but it was like, I felt very heard by him, and I really learned to trust him, especially with the way the movie came out. It's my story, and I'm so used to having all the control of my stand-up and my TV show. It was really hard to learn to trust someone like this, and I'm so glad that I did, and that he was patient with me.
In a lot of ways, it felt very similar to Freaks and Geeks, because Paul Feig, you know, brought me the pilot of Freaks and Geeks, which he wrote on spec, and then Jake Katzen was the director of the pilot, and we all sat around and talked about how we could make it better. But it was so important to Paul; it just was everything to him. And so, you're trying to listen to somebody and get a sense of their vision, but also to tell them what you've learned along the way about how things are really going to play up on screen, and what what story lessons or lessons about what goes too far or the balance between comedy and drama. So it's a constant debate, but that's why I like to get a lot of options and to screen a ton, because ultimately the audience will tell you if they're understanding it, if they're moved, if they're laughing. And then you don't need to argue about anything, because you're also asking the audience how they're connecting to it.
I don't think we ever argued now that we're talking about
No.
it.
No. Oh. I always knew that the edit would be hard, because Amy is such an incredible editor. And she's very anal about every frame of her TV show. And the whole time I thought, oh, in editing, you have to make a million choices. Every second you could be on a different person's face. You could use a different joke. You could use different music. So there's so many things to debate. And overall, it really could not have gone better, because for two people to see something even 98% the same way is a miracle. Because I have had the version of it where you get into editing or the whole process and you disagree about everything.
It seems like such a bummer.
The tone, the jokes, the story. And that's, that's the key to it, is
right.
It's like writing a song with somebody.
The only thing, and I will say this, is I really wanted to shoot in the penguin tank at the Central Park Zoo. and I did this whole penguin metaphor. And they went and they scouted it. They're like, there's water on it. It's not clear. It's not realistic.
And penguins don't do anything
they
in
don't
real
do
life.
Anything.
They look angry. They're not cute in real life.
They
only
just
animated.
Stand there. And I kept being like, I really want the penguins. He's like, girl, that's not happening for you.
So here's what I'd like to do. I want to spend a few minutes talking with Amy about Inside Amy Schumer. So,
are you asking me to leave, Terry?
I think for this part, I'd like to be alone in the studio with Amy. Is that okay with you?
That is fantastic. And Terry, can I say this for the show? I would just like to make very clear that I'm the first guest since probably William Buckley to be on the show twice in 3 weeks.
Wow.
And I thank you. I was here for the books.
That's right. That's right.
And then for Trainwreck. And I feel like I'm an important person, and l'chaim, as my people say.
Yes. Congratulations, Judd. Is that why you brought balloons?
Yeah,
I thought
I'm
it was
excited.
Weird you brought your own balloons.
I'm pretty excited. There's a pretty big NPR party for me afterwards.
Wow.
It's like the Saturday Night Live five-timers club. It's the twice-in-three-weeksers club.
It's just like a lot of like pale white people like holding up pens.
Well, it's been a pleasure to have you on twice in 3 weeks. So,
see you, Terry.
Congratulations on the film. Judd Apatow, thank you so much for coming.
Thank you.
And Amy Schumer, I'm going to ask you to stick around.
Yeah.
later.
I'm here.
Okay. And Amy Schumer wrote the new film Trainwreck. Judd Apatow directed it. Amy Schumer and I will be back after a break. This is Fresh Air. This is Fresh Air, and if you're just joining us, my guest is Amy Schumer. She wrote and stars in the new film comedy Trainwreck, and of course she created and stars in the Comedy Central sketch comedy TV series Inside Amy Schumer. The season recently ended, but I'm sure it's still available on demand. I want to talk with you about one of the most original editions that you did on your show, and this has become like already like a classic edition of Inside Amy Schumer. It was a parody of the 1957 courtroom drama 12 Angry Men. In this one, the jury is debating whether Amy Schumer is hot enough to have her own TV show. And I just want to play an excerpt of this. And some of the great actors in this sketch are Paul Giamatti, John Hawkes, Vincent Kartheiser. And the foreman of the jury is played by Jeff Goldblum. And he speaks first as he's addressing the jury in this scene.
All right, gentlemen, we should probably remind ourselves at this point that today's vote decides if Amy Schumer is hot enough to be on the television. If we decide that she is not, then she's going to lose her television show or be put to immediate death or both. I zoned out during that part.
Look, I'm just saying I'm undecided is all. I'm open to the idea, but I want to be convinced. So maybe you all who seem so certain could try to convince me.
Oh, I don't know. When I was her age, girls felt lucky if you just winked at them and let them make a tuna melt.
Hear, hear.
Now they all think they deserve TV shows. You got Mindy Nightmare and the Lena Girl Holocaust Hour.
Let me ask you a question. Where's Megan Fox's talk show?
I'd see a Kate Upton sitcom.
Okay, but are those girls funny?
Well, no women are funny. But, you know, if you have to hear them blab, they better at least be hot.
Thank you. But they're not going to get shows. You know why? There's no room left. All the slots have been taken by these manatees. Now this Amy Schumer's going to be in a movie? I mean, we got to stop this.
A movie?
That's too much. She's starring in it?
I definitely don't think she's protagonist hot.
But Kevin James is.
I don't need to think about him. That's why they hire hot chicks to stand around him while he's talking.
I thoroughly enjoyed Here Comes the Boom.
Maybe she doesn't have to not be on TV at all. You know, maybe she could play somebody like a wacky neighbor or a divorced obese woman with a funny dog.
Look, the point is, the more she's out there flaunting that chipmunk face, the more her type becomes acceptable.
Yeah, people get confused. It could throw the standard off for shows everywhere.
Yeah, they'll be thinking that quirky-looking dump trucks are okay to broadcast all over the dial. We can't let her do that.
Less Melissa McCarthy and more Jenny McCarthy.
Yeah, she's the funny one.
Remember when she convinced us not to vaccinate our kids against easily preventable diseases? That was hilarious.
It's a sketch from Inside Amy Schumer. How did you come up with the premise for this?
This was the first scene that I thought of in our over our hiatus. I thought about my two friends were male comics. They were deliberating at a party if they thought Michelle Williams was hot, the actress, and they're both, you know, really like kind of debating this, and they're like, I don't think I'd have sex with her, and I'm just like looking at them like, and they look like complete gargoyles, you know, and I'm like, and they were, and I just kept thinking of the word deliberating. And I was like, well, what's the ultimate deliberation? And, you know, there's a constant stream of articles and comments about Lena and Mindy and myself. And
how did you come up with the insults that you wrote the actors to say about
you? I wrote that one by myself. I got some help in the writer's room punching it up, and Jesse took a pass, but it was, that one was my baby, because I've known now for this is the third year I've done the show, so I know what it's like when you're like, oh, and you guys, like, everybody write a couple insults about me. Then you're handed all these new insecurities, like, oh, right. I didn't realize, like, my ears were small. So I was like, I'm going to write this thing. So I wrote it. It was the hardest I've ever worked, and it was really difficult to cook up. At first, I think the first draft was like over 40 pages, just insults about myself, funny and original insults about myself. And I got kind of upset. Like, you know, it just got to me. I'd been writing. I was on the road, and I'm on trains and on planes, and I'm writing horrible things about myself, saying I'm built like a linebacker and I have Cabbage Patch-like features. And then I don't know, something just, and I wrote to Jesse Klein and Dan Powell, the other EPs on the show, and I was like, should I keep doing this? It's starting to feel kind of bad. And Jess was like, you want me to take it off your hands for a pass? I was like, yeah. And, you know, I spent so much time writing that and then writing which shots I wanted to recreate and preparing to direct it. I directed it along with Ryan McFall, our director, and the network said, sure. We kind of lied and made it sound like I was going to be a little more present in the episode than I was. And I'm so proud of it.
It's so great.
I can't believe it happened.
Do you feel that people have actually sat around debating whether you're hot enough to have your own TV show or hot enough at least for basic cable?
Absolutely. Absolutely. Now, I don't think people are spending all their time thinking about me, but I do think that I've just enough feedback has reached me where people are like, I can't decide if you're hot or not. Like they're plagued by it. They're like, it's actually,
is that funny?
You know, they kind of look on the internet to see how, if they're attracted to me or not.
Is that funny or infuriating?
It's both. It's both. It's, you know, and people on the internet will say that I'm the most beautiful woman they've ever seen. And they'll also say I'm the most disgusting woman they've ever seen. And I'm like, well, you're both right. It's just, you know, but it doesn't, but it was so liberating to write this. And I just feel very free. I feel very free from judgment. And it was really liberating and therapeutic.
I think that women of different generations love you. And I'll put myself in this category. And it's in part because you're so good at taking down stereotypical images of women and social expectations projected onto women. And you do it with such hilarious satire. And it's like you're really making okay for women to be themselves and not feel like they're second rate because they're not fulfilling
That's
these artificial
fully
expectations,
tear up.
You know?
Fully tearing up over here, Terry.
Yeah, so
didn't see that happening for me today. That means a lot to me.
Oh, so before you tear up, let me point out the downside of this.
Okay, good.
That, ready? That so many women, because you've become such a hero, that everybody now wants you to validate their choices, for your humor to validate their choices. So if you say anything that doesn't validate the choices I've made in my life, then I'm going to feel like you let me down because you're
like
doing
what's
this.
An example? I kind of know what you mean, but I just want to make sure I understand.
Oh, well, like say you decide not to have children or say you decide to have children. Then
right.
I could say like, hey, she copped out. She was making this alternate choice and not having children, and now she's had a child, so you know,
right.
I'm signing off. Like you can't represent like everybody's needs and everybody's choices that they've made in life.
I remember I love Ani DiFranco, and I've been a fan of hers since I was, I don't know, 12, and was like going to see her do shows at Roseland at that age. And I remember, you know, she was this just, you know, beautiful singer, but also like these angsty, I'm not going to take any crap from anybody. And then she kind of softened about some things, and she had a baby and she fell in love. And I remember her just expressing that some people felt kind of let down by that and how unfair that seemed. And I remember thinking that was really unfair. So I just know that I'm not going to try to be that for everybody, and that I like truly am someone who has no judgments about the way people are. Like if someone doesn't like enjoy having sex or anything and they want to live completely the opposite of me, I have no judgments about that. And so I think when other people have expressed that, I feel no connection to it. I don't feel bad about letting someone down with that stuff.
There's one other sketch I want to ask you about. And this was in part a parody of Friday Night Lights, but it was also just a comment on rape and date rape. I imagine you sitting there thinking, where is the joke in all of this? It's like rape is so horrible. Where, how do you make it funny so you can make like a hilarious commentary about how awful rape is? So can you Describe how you came up with this sketch.
Sure. So this one was pitched by Christine Nangle, who also wrote the scene before with the about rape in the military. And this scene, you know, when it was pitched, it was just, it's going to be, you know, a parody of Friday Night Lights with the new coach that comes into town, and his controversial view and technique is that he's going to say no raping. And we just, first of all, we all love the show Friday Night Lights, and we were all so horrified by Steubenville and all of the incidents that have happened like that, and the treatment of the girls, and, you know, even the treatment of the Cosby accusers. And it really just felt like we can do this, and we can handle this in a way that's palatable for people, that, because, you know, if people feel like they're being lectured, and everyone tunes out, but if you can say, no, we're going to make this visually interesting, and there's jokes in there, and we also think you can take a message away from this scene, those are our favorite scenes to do. And, you know, I also just really wanted to play Connie Britton and drink huge glasses of white wine.
Okay, so here's an excerpt of the sketch. The new coach has just come to town, the new coach of the high school football team, played by Josh Charles. And he's giving his new rules to the members of the team, and his third rule is that you can't rape, no raping. And the guys on the team are like, what? And they all have questions about clarifying that rule. And here's the clip.
Can we rape at away games?
Nope.
What if it's Halloween and she's dressed like a sexy cat?
Nope.
What if she thinks it's rape, but I don't?
Still no.
What about like a sexy ladybug?
Oh, yeah. Nope.
A ghost? What about a sexy owl? Sexy transformer?
What if my mom is the DA and won't prosecute? Can I rape?
No, you cannot.
What if she's drunk and has a slight reputation and no one's going to believe her?
That ain't allowed.
Okay. The girl said yes to me the other day, but it was about something else.
No.
What if the girl said yes, but then she changes her mind out of nowhere? Like a crazy person.
You gotta stop.
No, you gotta stop!
That's a sketch from Amy Schumer's show Inside Amy Schumer on Comedy Central. Amy, the way I understand it, you asked your sister to move back to New York so she could work with you. And she's been collaborating with you. She worked with you on your new movie, Trainwreck. I think she's worked on your TV show, too.
She's here. Do you want her to come in?
Well, yes, only if you have time.
Yeah. You want my sister to come in?
Sure, yes.
All right, Kimmy, come on in. She's like, in here?
Thank you.
Put those headsets on.
Oh, my God.
Hi.
Hi, Kim. Thank you for coming in.
Thanks for having me.
No, my pleasure. So, you know, my understanding is that Amy asked you to move back to New York and leave your job as a psychologist.
She did, yeah. I was working in Chicago as a school psychologist.
Yeah, to work with her on...
I was like, please stop helping children and come write comedy.
And I haven't helped a child since. It's been...
just me.
Just Amy.
Well, let me start. Amy, why did you want her to come and work with you?
Mostly because I'm lonely. No, I... She's the funniest person I know. Her mind is just, she's got such a good mind. And I just knew that she would be a great writer. And yeah, she's always made everything that I've done better. So yeah, I was like, please.
I think it's also helpful because I know Amy so well, you know, obviously for my whole life, that I understand her humor kind of perfectly. And so when something has to be written in her voice, I know what her voice is. And so it's really easy for me to picture things that she would say and how she would say them. And it's just, it's a very natural thing for me to kind of write in her voice.
Well, what was your decision-making process like when Amy suggested that you move to New York and collaborate with her and give up your job as a school psychologist?
I asked, like, how much money do I get?
No. Yeah, I mean, she owns a home in Chicago, husband, dog, and they had to all uproot.
It was an opportunity to you know, moved back and we lived together for 5 months. So I knew that I'd get to spend this time with her and kind of create this thing. And when I was considering it, I just thought that it was going to be for, you know, 6 months and that it would be kind of like a snapshot of our life that, like, how can you not do it? I didn't really see it turning into, like,
Now this is your life.
And now this is my life. And so it was kind of too exciting a prospect to pass up. Had I known that it would turn into this, I would have said yes without any, you know, deliberation.
Yeah. Kim worked on Trainwreck. She was a producer and The Receptionist, which we cut out. but and now we have all these projects together. And so it's very cool.
So in the movie Trainwreck, Amy Schumer has a sister. And Kim, you do not play that sister, but I'm wondering how much of it is based on you. And there's conflicts between these two sisters. Amy, your character is single and doesn't intend on settling down. And the sister is married with a child and very happily married and wants to convince the sister to settle down. And as they say, as the cliche goes, settle down. And yeah. Also they argue about the father. You know, the father left the family when the girls are young. And the father, you know, cheated on the mother when the girls were young. And now he's very opinionated about their lives and kind of has opinions that the sister doesn't really want to hear. So I'm wondering if you as sisters had any of the conflicts that are expressed by the sisters in the movie, and if so, what it was like to work it out in a movie version.
Well, I would first say that our dad didn't leave us. Our mom left him. And I mean, he probably cheated on mom, but we never knew about that.
Yeah.
Like, I would guess. But and I am closer with him than Kim is. We just had different experiences of him because I'm 4 years older than her. So I got 4 more years of living in a house with him, like remembering him singing to us while we would go to bed and tucking us in and being like a good dad. And the problems that we deal with, because Kim doesn't have a child and isn't like this suburban, hasn't like taken on, those are the differences. And I would say Brie Larson, who plays Kim amazingly, has a little more edge than Kim. Like, the real Kim is very, very silly and like a child, and still takes care of me and can be stern when I need it, and vice versa. But the issues of me feeling a little abandoned because she got married and all these things that I'm not proud of, that I didn't realize until I was writing the movie, of feeling like someone's pulling away. But, and you know, from her point of view, it's like, well, this is what people do. Like, they meet someone, they fall in love, and we can all be a family. It was very difficult. And the days that we shot the scenes where the sisters fight, I asked her to not be on set just because it was too painful. And as sisters in real life, we actually never fight. We just don't fight. We express ourselves and we'll say if something hurt us, whatever. But
watching that scene, like, I don't feel like I'm watching, you know, an argument that we have or a conflict we have being lived out. I watch Amy and I see her, like, it's a scene where really she's, like, hurting herself. And so I feel it's sad for me seeing her do that. And at the same point, I'm also thinking, oh, my God, like, she's such a good actress, like, watching her do this. But I, yeah, watching that scene, it just makes me want to hold her hand and, you know.
Yeah. I think a big realization while I was writing this was that my sister, a scene and a line that was cut out of it is me saying, like, you're so sweet for letting me, for pretending like I was okay. Like, I say I'm not okay, and you're so sweet for letting me, for making me think that I was. And I just realized I've been making my sister watch me hurt myself, you know, for so long. And I just thought, if I had to see her hurting herself, I just couldn't even do it. So I thought that must have been so hard for her. And I just wanted to apologize and let her know that things were going to change.
It's been a pleasure to talk with you. Thank you both so much. And
thank
congratulations
you for
having us, on the movie.
Thank
it's
you.
Just so enjoyable. Thank you.
Thank you. Thank you so much.
Amy Schumer wrote and stars in the new film comedy Trainwreck. Her sister, Kim Caramelli, is an associate producer of the film. Today, Amy Schumer was nominated for an Emmy for Best Lead Actress in a Comedy Series for her performance in her Comedy Central series, Inside Amy Schumer. Kim is a producer and writer on the show. There was a chapter of our interview that there wasn't time for in today's broadcast, but we have it as an extra on our podcast today. Our podcast is also the place to catch up on interviews you missed, like our interview about medical marijuana with Dr. David Kasseret, or our interview with Ta-Nehisi Coates about how many young African Americans have been exposed to violence on the streets and from the police. Fresh Air's executive producer is Danny Miller. Our interviews and reviews are produced and edited by Amy Sallet, Phyllis Myers, Anne-Marie Baldonado, Sam Brigger, Lauren Krenzel, John Myers, John Sheehan, Heidi Simon, and Teresa Madden. I'm Terry Gross.